time for another edition of the Monday Roughing the Passer podcast. I'm Pete Prisco with Brady Quinn and Pat Kerwin. And fellas, week 16 in the books. Can you believe we have one more week left? It's incredible.
I think it's an incredible season. This has been a blast, but I got to start right away, Pete, with this question. I'll be very anxious to hear your answer. What is the most important story of the last weekend? What story is the most compelling football story that we have to discuss?
Well, a lot of people will say it's the Peyton Manning HGH thing, but from my standpoint, and I like mostly staying on the field and X's and O's in football, and I think we do that a lot in this podcast, and for me, it's Bill Belichick's buffoonery at the end of the Jets game. And I love the word buffoonery because that's what it was. I mean, this guy outthought himself again. I mean, look, Bill Belichick to me.
That's a nice way of phrasing it, by the way. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Well,
it's buffoonery? A respectful way. No. He outsmarted himself.
Yeah. Okay. Bill Belichick to me is in the conversation as the greatest coach of all time. Bill Belichick will be in Canton, and there's no doubt about it. He is a wizard when it comes to the game of football. But my point on a guy like him is that even the all-time greats blow situational coaching. There is no rational thinking for deciding to kick the ball in overtime when you have Tom Brady as your quarterback. None. Zero. Zippo. The percentages, and even the stat heads, all those geeks that break
analytics
down stats,
and all that.
Analytic guys, they all said he made a mistake. Well, okay, when they back up my football thinking on it, then I know for sure I'm right, and I'm right again. Belichick blew it. He should have taken the football.
Yeah,
well,
but
did you read Tom Brady's quotes this morning?
He's covering for his guy.
No, he's not. I thought he was right on target. I'll be interested. Brady might break this tie here, but he said he wasn't offended at all by the decision. He said if the offense was playing better, maybe it would have been different. But he referenced the Denver game when they took the ball, didn't do anything, and didn't get it done. But I thought they were more depleted yesterday than they ever were at Denver.
I mean, I think we're always going to look back in hindsight, right, and second guess it, because it is Tom Brady that's playing quarterback. And Tom did say the right things, and I'm sure some part of him believes that. But there's some part as a competitor and as a quarterback. I can only imagine what Tom Brady's thinking, but I would imagine in his head – he's thinking, give me an opportunity, and I'll go win you the game like I've done.
Would you have been
so
insulted
many times
if that was you and you had the same
it's
career?
It's not about insult.
Same career as Tom Brady. Same exact career, and that's you. And you go, okay, we're going to get the ball, we're going to go first, and then you find out your coach decided to kick. You're not taken aback by that?
I'm taken aback by it. I'm not insulted, and I would want an explanation. I think especially a coach that I've built that much of a rapport with and one where I've had so much success with, I think behind closed doors I go in and say, Coach, what, you know, tell me honestly, you know, what were you thinking? Have you lost confidence in me? Is there something that you lost confidence in our offense that I need to help improve? That would be more of the conversation, I think, after the fact, but not, in the moment on the field and all that.
No, but after you go into the locker room and you realize it, it's an insult to your quarterback, to me, and that's the way I took it. Game flow matters when you make situational coaching decisions. I know a lot of the analytics guys say if it's this, you have to do that and everything because the numbers say so. But I think game flow is important. And in that game flow, correct me if I'm wrong, yeah, the offense didn't do much. But in the final drive to tie the game, they went down the field and scored to tie the game. So the flow was in their direction at that moment. No?
You can make that case, but I think you could have made the case for the way the defense had played all day, right? That was the offense only scored 13 points. The defense had a touchdown as well. And when I'm looking at the game as a whole, regardless of the flow, right, it just because you kind of had that one nice drive at the end, that doesn't mean your defense isn't playing better than your offense as a whole. So if you want to put your best foot forward, it's probably going to be your defense. I actually compare it to a tag team wrestling group, right? When you go in, when you got that WCW or WWE, whatever it is now, who you throw in your best guy first? You don't throw in the lesser of the tag team partner, right? Because eventually that guy's going to tag team the other guy in, right? So they put what he felt was his best chance of winning that game.
Who's the best chance for the Patriots any day, anywhere, moving forward, and in the defense, Brady?
Okay, look, I'm just trying to give you what he was thinking.
I know what you're trying to do, but you guys got on me because we in the previews I jumped on him, and God forbid we jump on Bill Belichick.
You didn't jump on him. You softened your tone.
I don't soften my tone ever.
Stop.
I don't soften my tone ever. It was buffoonery. It was dumb. It was stupid. There's no other way to do it. And you know what? I can go back through a laundry list of stupidity for him. A laundry list of them.
Well, if he has a laundry list, the rest of them have a regular freight train full of mistakes. But let's just take a look at the whole situation, as I see it anyway. The three drives prior to that, that when the Jets had the ball, he forced a punt all three times, a three and out, a three and out, a six and out. In those 12 plays, the Jets rallied for 36 total yards in three drives. So I'm thinking his defense, he's thinking his defense is pretty good. And he's down to Gronkowski and nobody else. I can understand in this case, if he had Edelman and Amendola and the guys, and he had his left tackle, I would say pretty sure he's taking the ball. But I think we got to look at, A, what was the defense doing? B, what were his offensive circumstances?
Yeah, I agree. Game flow. But game flow was the last time he had the football, he went right down the field and he scored to tie the game. Okay, we go back in history. Okay? At the fourth,
you're being so nitpicky.
No,
with
I'm not.
One man,
it just, I love the guy as a coach. I respect him greatly. I really do.
But okay, so you're going to use an example of the times when he messed up clock management, right?
Yes.
Okay. Who's been perfect? Give me your example of who Bill Belichick is.
Nobody's perfect,
to.
But that doesn't mean we don't call them out when they're wrong about it.
Okay, but you're using every single example through the history of time of Bill Belichick, which is a small list.
But they're major ones, and he got away with them. It just goes to show you that they all blow. Fourth and two, or as I refer to it as fourth and jackass, in Indianapolis was dumb. And I remember I was at the game, and I said it at the time. I went in the locker room after the game, and I remember, I don't know if it was, I think it was might have been Peyton. Peyton says that was only an insult to us, but it was an insult to his own defense. I mean, that was an insult. That was an insult to him. Then he didn't get away with that one. Then there was the New Orleans game in the regular season when he went for it in his own end and he got away with it because Brady bailed him out. In the playoffs last year, the Ravens game.
You're using examples where Ravens they were game. Successful based on the decision that he made.
And then in the playoffs last year, do you remember the Baltimore game when Brady was trying to run out the clock and he didn't know how to run out the clock? And what happened was they had a punt return that they should have never had, and they had a shot Hail Mary into the end zone. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
What was
that
the end
not
result
a,
of that game?
But was it? But why even put it in that situation, Brady?
Because there's a lot of times, right, where you're talking about it. You can sit here on Monday like every other Joe out there and be critical of him, but it's a lot more difficult in the heat of the moment to go with the flow or make those emotional decisions at that point in time. And you use the statistics that you have and the feeling for your team the best you can. Well, when it comes down to it, you're not always going to be about 1,000% with your clock management decisions in the heat of the moment.
But I can understand, you know, me, if I picked apart a play call or something like that, it's hard to me. But situational coaching is easy to decipher. At the end of the Baltimore game, have Brady move around a little bit, then take the knee, and you never have to punt, and you never have to have a Hail Mary.
Believe me, from being in their system, I know they have that in their playbook. I know they do. I know they have launch victory, where if you have 6 seconds left, 7 seconds left, maybe that's kind of cutting it close,
right,
splitting hairs, they're going to roll you out, and you're going to launch that ball as high as you can out of bounds where you've got a wide receiver running a go route. I know they have all this. I know they have a take a safety. Where
so
they
what,
run the punter
freeze,
back and all
did
that.
Did he freeze in the moment then? Does he freeze in the moment?
I'm not in that locker room. I'm not on the field to tell him.
But you
all I'm trying
game.
To say is you're trying to point out examples where you feel like he messed up, yet they still won in the end.
Yes, because not every time are you going to get away with it. It'll catch up
to
you.
Yeah, sometimes you get lucky.
I mean, like in the Super Bowl. At the end of the Super Bowl, he, you know, and you guys have seen the documentary that he did. It was great.
Out,
He looked over and he said he saw something. No, he choked in the moment. He got away with it.
Hey, just put him in, since you're hitting him pretty hard here, put him in context with every coach you've ever watched.
He's arguably the best of all time, but that's the point. Even the great of all time gags when it
because
comes to clock
because we're human.
Managers.
We don't have some IBM computer running a head coaching position on the field.
But those should be things that play into your head. Is there anything in your makeup, Brady Quinn or Pat Kerwin as a head coach, that you would sit there and say, you know what, we win the coin toss, we're going to kick?
Well, since the rules have been changed, since you brought that up, since the rules have been changed, this has happened three times now. And the New England Patriots, who did it once before in 2013 because of the weather conditions, in Denver, they still won based off kicking off in overtime, right? Now, you try to claim that when the Minnesota Vikings did it this year, you thought the weather was bad.
It was.
I don't think so. I don't agree.
Really windy. I remember watching it.
I don't agree. I don't think it was as bad as it played out to be.
In both of those instances, there was weather in situations.
So which is why some people would say that's why you kick.
Right. Was there any weather in yesterday?
Okay, but I disagree with the Minnesota one this year. So that's for you to argue.
And I still wouldn't do it.
But all I'm saying is it's the first time someone's done that since the rule has changed in which a team messed up. Now, I will point out this. It's only happened three times since the rule changed in 2012 for a reason, to your point, right? But even then, I still think there's logic behind it. There's probably analytics. I'm telling you, Ernie Adams, and Pat, you could probably speak to this. Ernie Adams is the guy that like no one talks about, no one really knows about, and he's got to be the guy, Pat, in my mind, who I think probably was in his ear telling him or helping him make that decision at the end of the game and in an overtime.
Well, then you need to get rid of Ernie then. Because Ernie made a bad decision.
That would never happen.
Personally, I don't think you can talk about this decision in a blanket form like you should always take the ball. I don't think you should ever say that. There are circumstances where maybe kicking is smart. I'm looking at the history that he had in front of him. The last three times the Jets had the ball. 3 and out, 5 yards. 3 and out, 7 yards. 6 and out, 24 yards. That's all they did. So he's got a defense that's pretty much stopping them, and he's got an offense that's down to one guy. And they had just been on the field for long. It's easy to say, well, they scored, so they'd score again. Maybe after the 11-play drive, they're punched out a little bit. Maybe they're over there trying to figure it out. Maybe they're trying to realize, we got a lot of injuries here. Where are we going to go? I will give you this. If I kick off, and I know my kicker can put it in the end zone, you're starting on the 20, the best you're going to do is – one first down, you're going to punt the ball, and now I'm giving Brady the ball on his own 40-yard line. And now with Gostkowski, I only have to get 30 yards, and I'm going to win the game. I think it's worth discussing that could have been part of his logic, and if it was, I have no problem with it. And I don't even call it second-guessing or that he blew it. I would say he might do the exact same thing again if he had the exact same circumstances.
Yeah, good for him because he'd be wrong again.
You are great.
Well, look, Pete has the stats to back this up.
It's not the stats.
No, it's just true, though. Statistically speaking, it is true right. When you look at
but
the course
not,
of it.
And I don't always go with the stats because there are certain times, like somebody say, if you had fourth and goal at the 2 late in the game and you're down 9, that you should go for the touchdown. I'm a big believer you kick the field goal to make it 6, and the stats say sometimes you shouldn't. But I just think in that situation, he blew. And having Brady, to me, is the part of the reason why. Let's transition to another quarterback. Other big news from the weekend, Peyton Manning. The HGH, there was a story on Al Jazeera America Network that said that Peyton Manning and others, because Clay Matthews' name came out of that and James Harrison's name came out of that, were linked to an HGH or a clinic in Indianapolis.
A Geyer Institute.
Yeah, where they, you know, it's self-improvement. There are those places are all over the place. And he got HGH sent to his home in his wife's name. Now, Manning denied all reports of using HGH, and it was in 2011, and if I'm not mistaken, the timetable will be interesting there because I think in 2011 was when they first started making HGH something they tested for and something that was banned by the NFL.
Well, that would have been what was agreed upon based on the CBA back in 2011.
Right.
And I'm sure Pat can speak more to the you know, finite details of that agreement, but they actually didn't start testing until 2014 for HGH.
But it was banned. But it was banned in.
It was considered. It was considered banned at that point in time. But how can something be banned if you don't test for it? No one's. I mean, there's no point.
Right.
The other things where you could kind of poke holes in that whole situation is the intern, who was the one that supposedly was the guy. I want to say his name was Sly. In this, he technically wasn't even there until 2013, and Peyton supposedly had gone to this facility to receive treatment back in 2011 when he had the neck issues. And so it didn't make a whole lot of sense how this guy would have any information whatsoever.
Hearsay.
Yeah, it'd be completely hearsay. So I don't know if there's too much credibility to any of this, but I will say this. There are a couple interesting things. If I'm not mistaken, like some of the names that serviced this, Mike Neal did serve a suspension 4 games for PEDs, if I'm not mistaken. Who was named in that?
For the Packers.
I think Harrison has as well. He's not?
No.
Okay. But I want to say a couple of the names in there, they were guys who have. So I don't know if they were thrown in there to build more credibility or if they actually have documented proof that those guys were a part of that clinic. So that was the first thing where I was like, this is all BS. And then all of a sudden I said, wait, couple things are factual.
Well, here's something I wanted to ask you, and you guys know, because the hyperbaric chamber, do teams have a hyperbaric chamber in their facility usually?
Not like the legit ones.
Right.
No, so, we did.
You did?
Yeah. We had two of them.
What they have are, they're like big sleeping bags, and they blow up and they fill up with air. The
like
plastic
the people
ones.
Have at home. But no, I'm yes. talking about something
had,
where
we
you
had,
go.
We had the hospital versions.
You had the hospital versions.
Yeah.
Well, that's something that would, if the Colts had a hospital version of a hyperbaric chamber at their facility, why would Peyton have to go to the Guyton Clinic every day to go sleep in a hyper, to go get the hyperbaric chamber treatment? That's something to me that, and I didn't know, because I don't remember the Jacksonville Jaguars back in the day when I covered them having a hyperbaric chamber, and I don't remember seeing them at many facilities. But, Pat, you said you had one at the Jets, or two?
Yeah, we had two of them, and, you know, I know we were one of the first teams to ever get them because a lot of guys were calling me about it and where'd we get it and how'd we get ahead of the hospitals. A lot of hospitals were on the waiting list for them, and we just had enough relationships with the medical community to get them. But I don't know that every team ever got one. I never stayed on top of it. We had them, though. And
did you have them in Denver when you were there, or Cleveland, or anywhere?
No, I mean, the only things that we ever had were the portable ones where you'd literally they would blow up essentially like these sleeping bags, I'll call it, and it would be, you know, pressurized at that point. They would pump oxygen into it.
And guys bought their own even and started sleeping.
Yeah, guys would buy their own and sleeping and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, to not to get off track, my wife tore her Achilles in world championships over in Japan. When she came back after surgery, I actually rented one for that season. And I had her go into it all the time because she was trying to come back to the Olympics 2012, which amazing comeback. And I think in part the hyperbaric chamber helped.
You think it helps?
Yeah, although I got in it. I'll tell you a quick story, not to get off track. I got so claustrophobic because it's so stuffy in there. Yeah. You have to bring in a fan and stuff. I ended up like, then there's like two zippers that you get to actually then cut off, make it airlocked. I freaked out, man, because I got in there. I was like, I got to go to the bathroom. Well, the zipper got stuck, and I couldn't get it. So I was like, oh, man, this isn't good. So I kind of started to wig out, and eventually I think I was like banging on it, yelling. And I think Alicia came down and opened it up. But then the next time I went in there and tried to do it, I had this gigantic knife where I was just like, I'm going to cut my way out of this thing if the zipper gets stuck again. And that was the last time I ever went in.
See, I think I'd be the exact same way.
It was
like
terrible,
getting in your own coffin or something.
It smelled like plastic. Oh,
you would have loved ours, Pete. It was like a big, it was very relaxing, big old sofa lounge chair with music. And it looked like a space capsule.
See,
that sounds really nice.
Yeah, that's really nice. But that's something that I thought when I saw that he was going there every day to do that. Why don't the Colts have one at their facility? But Brady, you don't remember seeing him at the Broncos or a regular and medical grade one.
Yeah, no, not a medical grade one. Although, but back to like the report and the story, there were some details that I thought were really interesting that I would love to ask Pat about. I was reading a report talking about one during the lockout. And Pat, if this is true or not, maybe you can help me out. So once the lockout occurred in March and then went to the end of July, technically nothing is banned and nothing is considered illegal because there is no CBA in place and there is no authority. Is that correct, Pat?
That is how the players presumed it to be. And there was really no method to discipline players for anything.
So technically, he could have done whatever he wanted anyways. Every player could have, and it wouldn't have been illegal.
I'm just throwing that out there. I'm with you on that.
And there were incidents of things that happened during the lockout that the union claimed they could not be disciplined for, and I believe we did not discipline them.
But am I wrong here when I say, okay, fine, we all sit here and say he could have done it at that time and not been penalized for it. They weren't really...
Right.
Didn't really make it illegal, so it wasn't a big deal. But that's not what he's fighting for, right? He's fighting for the fact that if we sit here and know that he did that, then that tarnishes the legacy a little bit. That's what he's fighting for. Forget about the legality of it and the, you know, being penalized by the NFL and all that because it's all back in the day, so he can't be penalized for it. But am I wrong to sit here and say that this is about Peyton's legacy that he's fighting for and his reputation?
Well, maybe he didn't do it, and maybe he's fighting because it's not the truth.
That's the other side of it. I mean,
The first place. But the cynical American mind will be, no, that's not possible. He did it because there was a window of opportunity to do it. First off, he ain't stupid. So getting anything shipped through his wife, we've already seen that trick fail before, right? Baseball players have tried Mrs. Wife to do that. Look, Peyton has the resources. If he really wanted to do this, he could have gone to Europe every week. And in fact, I think when he was having his neck issues, was going to Europe to get treatments. So I think it's, to me, the part that's hard for me to do anything but laugh is, so he figured he was going to sneak it by the rest of the universe by having it shipped to his wife. He's not that dumb.
Well, here's the other thing, Pat, is if he is trying to do anything and everything in his power that is legal by the rules of the National Football League to get back on the field, aren't there some people that will sit there and applaud him for that and say, okay, this guy cares that much that something that's not illegal at the time by the rules of the National Football League, he is going to do everything and everything he can to heal himself to get back on the field. I mean, there's that side of it too, right?
There's more than that side. And Brady should jump in on this, but Brady, I think if it was determined by the top medical people that for three neck surgeries and for his physical rehab that HGH was going to improve it. And by the way, HGH has been prescribed by doctors. This is not just a black market drug. So if they thought it was going to improve him, why wouldn't he just go get approval to do it? Since it wasn't illegal at the time, they weren't testing for it. So he could have easily circumvented half of these problems. He's in rehab. He may never play again. And some his doctors determined this was going to make him better. If they thought that, then why wouldn't they just come forward back then with Tom Condon and say, here's what he's got to do. He's going to be on HGH for 6 months in order to get himself in a position where he potentially could play again.
I think it's probably because it kind of has a negative connotation when you hear HGH, or if a player needed to. A lot of people don't realize, you know, a lot of times that's coming out of, you know, different rehab and injuries and so forth. It was commonly prescribed to certain players and so forth. So I think in for that reason, maybe, Pat, and that's the only thing I can think of.
All right, now, you remember we were on this podcast and you said 40 to 50% of the NFL players are using something to get back out of the field.
I said that in the context of us saying if injuries, soft tissue injuries, are occurring at a higher rate,
right,
and we're not going to say it's the field and we're not going to say it's the cleats,
right,
then you have to point somewhere else. And I said it has to be something they're putting in their body.
But you did say 40. You guessed.
I thought about 40% of the league, some guys were taking things. Because here's what you know as a player. One, you know guys go to these different places across the country and they train, and they don't necessarily tell you what they're putting in the stuff they're putting in and all that. And they're getting bigger. They're getting faster. They're getting these gains. And you're going, well, I'm working just as hard, if not harder, than they are. So how's it happening? Is there that big of a variance in genetics and all that? Maybe in some cases, but not in most. I mean, these are some of the greatest athletes in the world. So there's not going to be that big of a variation between players. What it is the supplements and the PEDs and everything else out there is so far ahead of the testing that they can do that, and they can still get away with it because the testing's not quite there. And even if they were to get caught, it's the downside risk is only four games. Only four games. And I can't stress that enough, because when you're looking at investments, right, outside the world of football, and someone tells you, well, we're going to make $16 million on this deal unless it goes on the downside, then we'll, you know, probably lose four, but you're going to make somewhere between $12 or $16 million on this deal. You would say, yes, I'm willing to take the risk to do something like that if that's my downside risk.
Yeah, see, I understand it, and I might be one of the only guys out there in the media that sits there and says, in my mind, I think guys do what they have to do to get on the field. And in the end game of that, yes, you might get popped a couple times, but this isn't, to me, this isn't like something where the fans will turn away from a guy because he gets popped. I don't think. I mean, it's not, you know, did fans turn away from Tom Brady with Deflategate?
No.
I don't know.
People chose sides.
Right. But now that it's gone away and kind of been brushed aside, is Tom Brady on the field on Sunday any different than Tom Brady? Do fans perceive him any differently?
He got the most votes. He got the most votes this year.
Right. I mean, we are a very forgiving society, A. And
no, first we're a very suspicious society.
Right.
We like to think you're guilty.
Right.
And then if you crawl on your hands and knees and beg for forgiveness or show remorse, then we'll forgive you. There's a pattern to how Americans operate in this. I'd like to ask the two of you, if you were his dad and he came to you and said, what should I do here? Should he do what he had done and said, absolutely false, I'm going to fight this, I got Ari Fleischer, no comment at all, admit he did it? What would you tell him if he was your son?
I mean, I would tell him to tell the truth, because right. I think if and you get, yeah, and that's what I'm saying, and I think he did as well. Look, here's what I think's happened. I think some guy made up some story. They want to make a headline. Al Jazeera wants to try to look like there's some sort of prominent, you know, news source, whatever. Maybe I'll have to apologize later on if anything else comes out. But I think what this comes down to is a more personal matter for the Manning family. I think this more had to do with fertility. For his wife, and then trying to have children. If I'm not mistaken, they had twins.
They did have twins.
And that's very common, but that the female would end up taking some sort of human growth hormone,
correct,
with those sorts of treatments. So it all kind of lines up.
That's a privacy issue.
That's 100% a privacy issue.
It's just like when
that's why I'd be fired up.
It's just like when JPP had his hand cut off or his thumb. Yeah. That's a privacy issue. That's not an NFL
issue.
It's
a HIPAA violation.
Right. And that's why when the picture got tweeted out and sent out and everything, I thought that was horrible. Would anybody want your own medical records or medical records of your family being out there for public consumption? The answer is no.
Yeah.
And so if his wife is taking fertility drugs, that's their privacy. That's yep. their own thing. So, look, well, the bottom line is,
did they respect their privacy? No. When they launched the story, here's a news group that nobody in this little podcast or no one I know has ever referenced before in the world of NFL football. But now they're right in the middle of it. And they did it with this, in Peyton's opinion, a fabricated story. And I think they've already got their desired effect.
You know, and I'm one of those guys, you ask if would I be honest about it, would I want my dad to have, if my dad, you know, yes, I want him to come out. I wouldn't sit there and not say anything or do anything if it wasn't true, because if you don't say anything or do anything, then automatic perception is that it is indeed true. I'd fight it. I'd be the first guy to say, no, that's not true. That's garbage. And Peyton came out and said that. And as far as his wife, somebody said, well, his wife's quiet in this whole thing. Well, what's he supposed to do? Stand up and say, yes, I took fertility drugs and it's on me? That's not for anybody else to know. That's their own private situation. I mean, yes, it wouldn't be a big deal if she did and she could say that, but she doesn't have to say that.
No, she shouldn't have to. And it's unfortunate that in this country, and Pat said it, you know, we're suspicious, but we're now have to prove our innocence, you know, instead of people having to prove our guilt. And I don't know when that flipped in this country, but it's a sad day now that all of a sudden we feel like, and I'm not going to include us in this, but the general population feels like they are in the know. They have the right to know about Peyton Manning's wife or his family and those intricate details, or anyone else for that matter. And I don't know if I want to blame reality TV for it and all these dumb shows where these families let them come in and find everything out about their personal life.
I like reality TV.
Anyways, but I don't know if it's that to attribute it to, but all of a sudden in this country, it's like as soon as someone does something wrong, they are guilty and they have to prove their innocence to us, like we can sit on some high throne and judge everyone else. And that's what bothers me so much with this whole situation, but also society as a whole.
Yeah, and the other thing is, in the back of my mind, okay, I'll be honest with you, I think a majority, and I have no proof whatsoever, just, you know, covering the league, I think a lot of players do what they have to do to get on the field. Now, whether it's finding something new, and somebody says, well, then now they test for HGH. Well, you go find something else. And then there's always going to be the next.
Delta 2, apparently.
Right. Delta 2. There's always going to be something else. So do they do it? Yeah. You know, we were joking the other day. If somebody piled $16 million over in the corner of the room over there and said, hey, Pete, you take HGH for a year, you get the $16 million, would you do it? I bet there would be a long line of people that would do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's right, but that's the reality of it. And I think players will always play an angle to stay on the field. If he did something, who knows? But there's nothing right now. There's no concrete proof whatsoever that Peyton Manning took HGH. Nothing. It's all hearsay.
Well, and mark my words, this will turn into the Alex Rodriguez thing. They've immediately put Peyton right up there with Big Alex.
And that's not right.
That's right.
That's not right.
Nope.
I mean, has he ever tested for anything?
No.
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 Do they have proof of him injecting? Do they have pictures? Do they have, you know what I mean? Do they have that? No, they have nothing. They have absolutely nothing. And that's unfair. It's unfair to him. It's unfair to James Harrison. It's unfair to Clay Matthews. I mean, it's unfair to all of them. Unless you have concrete proof, it's hearsay.
Yeah.
Mark my words, I'll be on a four-hour show today, and you know what's going to happen? People are going to say, you're saying that because he's Peyton Manning, the All-American guy. If it was anyone else, you'd be hanging him, and I'll say no, because your point's well taken, Pete. James Harris needs to be Harrison needs to be defended in this, as well as Clay and everybody else who's on the list, Julius Peppers. So if you can dig out a list of anybody, you immediately do it to him. Here's one that came out. Did you see this story? This is another, like, bad journalism. Two stories reported that Jason Peters took himself out of the game because he didn't want to finish and get hurt in a game that for a team going nowhere. Then Chip Kelly had to go over that this morning and say that's not true. He was hurt in the game. You know, can you say anything you want nowadays? Does it matter? Who holds anyone in check on the internet?
Nobody.
I had a whole TMZ in check a week or two ago.
Yeah, what was that one?
Because
they talking about baseball.
Jeff Samardzija just signed a nice little ink contract, and I was doing another podcast, and I kind of said something along the lines of, you know, kids should think about picking up a baseball and a bat. You know, they can make themselves good money doing that. And all of a sudden, it leads into them thinking they spoke to me and are quoting me in an article, and I called them out on Twitter about it. So they call one of my other employers, not CBS, but another one, and ironically enough, they have a partnership with this company. TMZ has a partnership with Fox.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, TMZ didn't go through Fox to get my contact info. So they write an article. They think they've interviewed me. And once they realize they don't have the right cell phone number and that some random guy in Columbus, Ohio gave them an interview and they quoted me, they'd end up taking it down. They look like a bunch of idiots. And it's like, it's not that hard. But these people do. They run with this stuff nowadays. They don't confirm identities. They don't confirm information. They're so hungry to be the first one out there. I was first. Look, I get it. You're competitive, but you better be right, because all of a sudden, I mean, and look, I'm at fault too as an analyst. I see a stat, and sometimes I'm like, all right, that's a credible source. I should roll with it and use it, and I get burnt before. I saw one the other day. A guy called me out on Twitter about it. I said, you know, the Chiefs only have however many touchdown passes to wide receivers. I think I said six or something. It was really like 9 or 10. And Macklin had six. But I think what it was a week old stats or something like that. But anyways, it was like that's the day we're in now. You know, we can get all this information, but we got to make sure it's right before we use it.
And I'm going to go off on a little tangent here, because this is where I can, and you guys haven't been journalists, but you're in the journalism profession now and the communications profession. We're not training guys to be journalists anymore.
No.
You don't come up through the ranks. And you know, there's a whole – look, and I'm not going to sit here and say there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. But when I go into a locker room, when I've learned how to cover a football team, and I'm a beat guy and I'm writing on a regular basis, and I go in and I face the music and I'm sitting there and I go to my sources and I build my sources, I build my credibility. And if I write something about a guy and I say, this guy's not playing very well and here's why, dot, 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 and I go in there the next day and the coach rips me apart and the player rips me apart, I've learned how to be a journalist, okay? You're accountable. You can't just sit and write stuff without being accountable. Well, nowadays, I can write whatever the hell I want about you and not be accountable. I can write whatever the hell I want about Pat Kerwin and not be accountable. And CBS is going to make me accountable, so I have to be. But I'm talking about somebody else that's not working for a company like this. He starts a blog, he writes the blog, and he writes whatever the hell he wants. That's the problem right now with what's going on. And Pat, you mentioned it. It's better, or Brady, one of you guys said, it's better to be first than be right. And that's what we're getting to.
They don't care about right. They do care about first, and there is no apology. We know plenty of guys. And I know a couple of my friends that I consider good friends. They're under unbelievable pressure to break news every day. Now, there isn't news every day. That's the reality of it. We kiddingly say there's more subjects than we need to talk about, but news, real news, it's not an everydayer. So when you get the day that's slow, guess what? Some guys have gone out on a limb and taken a risk with a projection. And when it's backfired, no one cares. And as soon as you find out you're not going to be held responsible, you start loosening up your own standards, because what's getting people paid is first, not true. Hey, before this thing's over today, I'll put mine down. Just who you think the 12 teams are that are going to make it, and the order from 1 to 6 that you think they'll be this time next week when we meet.
Oh, yeah, we got to do that. We can start playing it out. One last thing about what we were talking about. When I sit on here and I rip Belichick or I rip a quarterback or I praise a guy or rip or whatever, I'll be accountable. If Bill Belichick wants to sit down with me and talk to me about it, I'm not going to shy away from it.
Yeah, but that'd be a treat for you too.
Oh yeah. Pick the brain of that guy?
like you're sitting there trying to stir the pot a little bit just so you can get that private sit down.
No, I've talked to him many times. I mean, he's not one-on-one privacy guy, and I actually got a Christmas card from him one year, surprisingly enough. But yeah, you know, to me, I'm never – like I told John Schneider once, I said, I don't believe in your quarterback. I flat out told the general manager that. So I'm not going to shy away from it. But I think that's where we're part of our problem is. We don't have enough guys anymore that have come up through the ranks. That doesn't dismiss bloggers and everything else, because I love the more the merrier. I read everything. I think there are guys that do terrific draft work that do it on their own. You know, there are guys that blog that do a terrific job. But if you're trying to do journalism and then you better have come up through the ranks as a journalist. That's what I believe.
I like your theory. Come up through the ranks. There's nothing wrong with it. I agree with it. But I'll take your formula for success and I'll apply it to football. I wouldn't read one guy's draft report that never played or coached. I just wouldn't waste my time. You've never scouted. You've never officially broken down tape for a team, and now you're gonna sit there in your basement. And I see these guys, they're all little cottage industries going pretty good right now. And I know they don't know what they're watching, Pete, but they get themselves out in public, and the next thing they're experts. It's kind of ridiculous to me. How's a 26-year-old guy that's living in his mommy's basement?
Oh, don't go there. If you go to mommy's basement, you're asking for it. You can't go there.
You can bring it on with me, because I love attacking these guys. One after another, I'll go after them. Because that, you know, I here's what I say all the time, Brady. You know, I was walking by a hospital the other day. I saw the door to the emergency room, and I decided to go in and do a heart operation because I felt like it.
Yeah, actually, I've used this before, because you know what Pete always tries to use is the old analogy of, well, what was that? I'm not a great chef, but I know it tastes good, right? Or I know what a good film is.
Yeah, and I'm not a director of a movie.
You know, here's my rebuttal to you is, yeah, you might know what a good steak tastes like, right? But I also thought a good steak was Ponderosa until it actually played, and then I realized that Ruth Chris was much better. Or a good film, for a matter. Yeah, I thought Dumb and Dumber was great, right? And then I saw a better comedy, like Old School, and I realized, oh, that's better. So that's the difference.
So I guess Bill Belichick doesn't know, because he never played the game in the NFL. So he doesn't know what a good steak tastes like.
He was trained coaching, by his father.
But he was trained
a long time. I'm not making a case for him playing.
No, but you're saying because you didn't play the game that you know.
You had to have actual experience before you're 26 years old writing who should be drafted in the first round. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, but you know what? I can actually say when I was 14 or 15 and I had pro draft, I would have been good at picking players in the NFL. So
you would say that, Pete.
It's hard to argue. But again, Pat, I'm back.
You have a lifetime of work, Pete.
Yeah, it's
been doing this forever.
I know. I've been.
And by the way, you're one of the only guys who asks me for film, and I give you all those college tapes, and I know what you do. You watch them all.
I love him. I'm ready for him already.
And that's why I like reading Pete's stuff, because I actually know he's at least watching film. He's trying to dive into all that.
I love it. I love that. But you're right. There's not a lot of guys. Look, I understand. But hey, the more the merrier. Let's get to your point about the 12, Pat. I'm curious to see where we're going to go with the 12. I think we'll pretty much agree on a lot of them, right? I mean, it's pretty much set.
Well, I'll say mine in the AFC, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong. New England 1, Denver 2, Cincinnati 3, Houston 4, Kansas City 5, Pittsburgh 6.
Wait. Wait a second. We just picked the Buffalo Jets game, and you picked
to see if you're listening.
Yeah, I'm listening. You picked the Jets.
I am and a Jets 6. But you know, I got to the last one, I go, he's already drawing up his. I better see if he's listening.
Yeah, I'm listening. So you like the Jets at 6 then?
Yeah, the Pittsburgh screwed themselves.
Okay. I would agree with 1, New England, 2, Denver. You think Denver's winning tonight. 3, Cincinnati, 4, Houston, 5, Kansas City. 6 Pittsburgh, because Buffalo Bills are going to rise up in Rex Ryan's Super Bowl this week.
There you go.
Unbelievable. I've got Denver winning as well. And why? What's Cincinnati on? Are they on their second road game, Pete?
And they have A.J. McCarron. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I actually did a breakdown of – this would be an interesting matchup tonight, because I did a breakdown of both quarterbacks for a column I write for. And if you looked at the success of both McCarron and Osweiler, you're saying, oh, they had pretty good games last week. Even though the Broncos lost and the Bengals, they put up a ton of points. Touchdown pass, nice completion percentage. Well, go back and watch the tape. I mean, when you put on the shot of A.J. McCarron throwing that touchdown pass, they had a 4 vertical concept. The San Francisco 49ers brought a safety blitz and completely dropped the guy responsible for Tyler Kroft. So he was running up the seam with no one on him. The post-high safety was rotating from the opposite side of the field, so there's no chance he was going to get there in time. It may have been the easiest touchdown throw McCarron's ever had in his career, both college and NFL. And that was his only touchdown pass of the day. They actually really tried to run the football in the first half. They had like 7 punts between the two teams at the beginning of the game. In the second half, they only had a field goal. So he didn't really do much besides that. He didn't have to do much. But it was a little bit deceiving. You look at Osweiler. I mean, there was a series I was watching. He drove down for a touchdown pass. One of his touchdown passes, he threw a short wide receiver pass to Demaryius Thomas in space versus Antoine Blake. Thomas blew him over and just walked in the end zone. That's kind of an easy pitch and catch. The other one was another blown coverage. They brought a double safety blitz, right? The problem was, I think it was Will Allen, who I know and I love the dude, but I think he somehow got his eyes caught in the backfield of the play action fake. And Emmanuel Sanders was running with no one on him down the middle of the field, that long touchdown. So that was kind of another blown coverage touchdown.
So let me ask
touchdown.
You that, though. You're a quarterback.
Yeah.
When you grade those plays.
When I'm grading myself?
No, no, not you.
I'm like, but anyone in the world could have done what I just did.
Right. So when you grade those plays, do you say that? Like, do you say anybody in the world could have just did what A.J. McCarron did? Anybody in the world could throw that smoke
screen? I would have
said
that if I was playing in that position and or if any other quarterback.
Because
when
I say that about a certain quarterback in Seattle, I get blistered for it.
Because I think I don't think that's the case.
A lot of those plays in the last 5 weeks, that was the case for him.
Not a lot of those plays. And you got to give some credit to the coaching staff and Doug Baldwin
right.
for him getting open and all that. But I'll tell you this much. To still complete it and all that, it's not about the actual, like the X's and O's part of it. Because the hardest part sometimes is to hit a wide open wide receiver. Like, people think that, and you're like, no, seriously. Like, because you've never seen that before. Like, when you've got tight coverage, you zone in and you focus in on that small target, right? Like, throwing at a dartboard. When you're trying to go for the bullseye, man, you don't even see anything else. Well, so as a quarterback, it's the same thing when you're throwing. All of a sudden, you see a guy wide open. Not only do you get a little juiced up, but you're just like, all right, you try to be almost too perfect with it. That's the hardest one to actually follow through and make an easy throw and completion out of, because you've got so much room to throw it in there, you just don't want to make sure you don't mess up. Like, that thought actually comes in your head, whereas if you have tight coverage, you have no room for any of the thought other than where you need to put the football in a tight space very quickly.
But it's still harder to throw to the tight space than to the open guy, though.
Yeah, okay. Theoretically, but like I can tell you 9 times out of 10, like, if you're throwing at a target, it's much easier than throwing at, like, some big wide open guy in open space. You're going, oh, this is easy, but it's not as easy as it looks. I'll say that.
No, and guys do have that. You know what? When a guy's wide open, I've had a lot of quarterbacks describe to me, goes, oh, God, I hope I don't overthrow him. That thought was in their head.
You're like caught by surprise. You're like a fullback wide open to flat. You're like, oh, my gosh, I've got to put this perfect ball, because when he's a fullback, usually those guys have a hard time adjusting.
Right.
But he's so wide open. It's like
you short arm
it or something. Yeah, so you kind of like try to take something off it, then you short arm
it.
You aim it as opposed to just throwing it. And all those things start to creep in your mind because you have time, you're not pressured. I mean, that's the crazy thing about that. But anyways, interesting matchup tonight because of the implications of the Cincinnati-Denver game and both quarterbacks coming off of good performances in theory. But I think they're facing defenses that will not blow coverages, who will be a much tougher opponent for them.
Watching the tape of the two, can McCarron or Osweiler win in the postseason?
Well, McCarron or Osweiler? I think Osweiler's defense in Denver can win.
But Cincinnati's defense is pretty good too, Pat.
I don't think the quarterback is as good, and I don't think the defense is as good. And I don't think home field is as good in Cincinnati as it is at altitude in Denver. So your question was, which one would I prefer with the backup quarterback? I'll take Denver.
No. My question was, could both of them win?
No. I don't, first off, I'll tell you what I think is going to happen. Shoot a hole in it. If it works out the way we just agreed, the Jets are going to Cincinnati and Kansas City is going to Houston. I'll take both wild cards. Over in the NFC, we'll get to that in a minute, but I have a suspicion I'm going to take both wild cards there too.
So you would take the Jets over the Cincinnati Bengals on the road?
Yep.
Boy, I wouldn't.
Well, I'm betting my Jet defense, since it's mine for the moment, is playing McCarron, and I'll take my chances. I like my cover guys, I like my front, and I like my linebackers to stuff the run. So I think they can apply an awful lot of pressure.
Don't the Jets have the same problem that Carolina does in the playoffs when we search for that hand on the ground, sack, fumble, game over guy? They don't really have that.
Well, they don't come with they're not built with the quality outside linebacker. They're front three,
right?
Front four rush team.
That defense is supposed to have an outside.
I like Maldon. I think Maldon can be that guy. I mean,
you're asking a lot for him, though.
I know he's a rookie, but I'm just saying.
I like him, too. And I would love him. You know, look, they blew the draft on outside backers a couple times in a row.
Cobbles.
Right? Cobbles and the guy before it, the what's his name? Golston.
Golston, yeah.
That's a flaw. That's the kind of flaw that shows up in the postseason. We talked about Carolina giving up a lot of points in the fourth quarter, Pat. You said the most in the league. And to me, those are the kind of things, when you look at teams' flaws in the postseason, because it gets real nitpicky. So we can nitpicky with them.
You know, I think it's interesting about that, Pat, and you could probably speak to this, is, you know, when you're going through the draft process and you have a 3-4 and you're looking for that outside backer, I think some teams get scared away by a guy being too small, as opposed to maybe a guy being too big, because they look at a guy that's too big and they say, well, we can still play him on early downs, he can stop the run right away because he's got that size, and we could eventually work on his pass skills and his technique and maybe work on his speed and make him into a pass rusher.
Right.
As opposed to the opposite argument where, well, this guy's only going to be used as a pass rush specialist, right? And we can only use him off the edge because otherwise we put him in there, people are going to run at him all day because he's so light.
You fully described Elvis Dumervil. He's at the Senior Bowl, and all I hear the whole week, he's only 5'11". He's a natural pass rusher. And, well, what are you going to do with him on first down? You're going to play him if you want to. But what happened to this guy? He's a sack machine. No one cares anymore. But it was like, okay, Elvis Dumervil's 5'11". Has he disappointed either in Denver or Baltimore as a guy who can rush the passer?
Not at all.
Pat, let's go through the AFC real quick. Tell me if these teams have the edge guy that you need in the postseason, sack, fumble, game over. New England.
No, they're another team that relies on the front base. I don't know.
But Jones can do it. Jones can do it.
Yeah, Jones is a terrific rusher.
Cincinnati.
Well, I don't know. You're going to tell me Johnson, aren't you?
But Dunlop.
Dunlop's very good. Geno Atkins inside.
I mean, yeah, they got the outside guys.
Yeah, they're good. They're good up front. Denver, they got a combination of guys.
Denver, yes.
Denver's leading the NFL in sacks along with New England. So
right.
Two
right.
guys that get to the quarterback the most are right there. Denver,
Houston,
New England.
Yes, of course. J.J. Watt, great edge rusher, and Merciless has amped his game up, and Clowney's playing very well too. So yes, they do.
As soon as our friend J.J. Watt got hurt, and they started to consistently put him on the same side as Clowney, it all opened up for Clowney.
I've been calling for that all year. And then the Jets. So from the down guys, but not the edge guys. So
no, they never. That's the haunting reality of bad drafts.
So if of the six teams that look like they're going to make the postseason, the one that doesn't have the outside edge rushers would be the Jets.
Yeah, you know, I think the top going into last weekend, the top seven teams in sacks were playoff teams, and that should surprise nobody.
Okay, and let's flip it over to the NFC, because let's go. I want to hear one through, and we'll talk about their pass rushers too. One through six in the NFC. Pat, you go first.
Carolina one, two is Arizona, but I think they're better. Green Bay 3, Washington 4, Minnesota 5, Seattle 6.
Okay, Brady.
I mean, I wouldn't see it any different.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah, that's probably how it will play out.
The only thing that would be different if Minnesota beat Green Bay, but we don't think.
But I would put then you put Green Bay.
And
at
then
five.
If Carolina lost to Tampa and Arizona won, then Arizona would be one. But I don't think that's happening either.
Yeah,
and pretty locked in. You're locked in at five and. You know,
Seattle
beat Minnesota though, so wouldn't Seattle be the five then?
Seattle will be the five unless they're one game better than them.
Oh, so you're saying? But what if they both lose though this week? Then they would be tied. And Seattle would be the five, and Minnesota would be the six.
Hold on. Just if both lose, first off, correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't Seattle 9-6?
Oh, that's right. They lost the game.
Yep. Yeah, they lost yesterday.
Right. That's right. I'm so right. So Seattle would be the six then. So in the playoffs, it would be Seattle at Green Bay.
And I'll take Seattle.
Well, I don't know about that one.
I don't trust Green Bay anymore.
I don't trust Green Bay's offensive line.
I don't trust Seattle's offensive line either.
Yeah, but Green Bay doesn't have as good of a pass rush.
So, you know, it's your choice to do
it.
Yeah, you want.
And then it would be Washington hosting
Minnesota.
I might pick the Redskins in that game.
Yes! Kirk Cousins, baby.
Yeah, you like that.
I bet he likes that.
I mean, don't you think the Redskins would be much more thrilled to play Minnesota than Seattle? Especially considering, you know, the last three times the Redskins have been in the postseason, Seattle's knocked them out all three times.
Yeah.
Well, it really cool, and I hear you guys about why you take Washington. So it does provoke this question. I think you're taking them. This is only a question, not a statement. That because you know they're hot right now. So when you look at that, who's hot? Carolina. I'm not calling. Arizona's hot. Washington's hot. Packers aren't.
You would have said Seattle was until last week.
Yeah. So.
And they could be coming off two losses in a row.
Kind of like in that, you know, they're on a bit of a roll here.
Okay, let's go through their path.
I'll take all four wild card teams.
Yeah, that ain't happening, but you could take them.
First time for everything, Pete. Four.
Okay, let's go through the pass rushers in the AFC. Who has the outside pass rusher? Carolina? No. Right?
No.
Pat? No? Yes?
No, I think that's where they're disappointing.
Right. Arizona?
Freeney.
Golden? Marcus Golden's Golden. Playing good.
Oh, they're after the quarterback now.
Right. Yeah. All right. Green Bay.
Well,
good to put Clay outside.
Right, which is where he should play. Yeah. Do you think they're good enough to rush the passer outside? If Clay goes outside, he's that guy, right?
Well, on third down, yeah. You know, he keeps talking about how he's getting better in coverage, but I wouldn't worry about that. He'd be rushing on one side and Peppers on the other, and I don't know what left the Peppers really, but.
So we'd say no for Carolina, yes for Arizona, yes for Green Bay. Redskins, yes. Kerrigan and gang can get after the quarterback from the edge. Right? Would you guys agree?
I'm not fighting you.
Okay. Seattle. Yes.
Yeah, they come from a lot of different places.
But they got edge guys because Irvin can win outside. Yep. Averill can win outside. Bennett can go outside and go inside. So, yes. And then Minnesota, yes. So – in the postseason, of all the, say those are the 12, of the 12 that get in, the only two teams that don't have sack, fumble, game over, edge rusher are the New York Jets and the Carolina Panthers, who both can rush the passer from the inside. Right?
Yep.
I still think, and this is me, this is old school me, that in the end, you better be able to pressure the quarterback off the edge.
Let me make a case for the Jets. I talked about Molden, and I know he's just a rookie and all that, but he's done a nice job. And let me make a case for Muhammad Wilkerson, because when I was watching film preparing for that game the other week versus the Cowboys, I was just completely floored with how athletic he is.
Yes.
For his size. And you'd see him be able to beat defenders when they do put him on the outside. You know, he's got great hands. He's got that nice swim move, but he's got so much power. So if you want to call it that speed to power bull rush. I mean, he's got that.
Yeah. He's kind of the X factor in the whole
thing.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying.
They don't have that. But you play the quarterback position. You hate pressure at your feet. But when those swift guys,
you don't feel so much pressure at your feet. You feel it in your face.
What about the edge guys, though? Aren't you always afraid that they're going to swipe the ball out, knock it out?
No, because you work on so many drills to step up and all that. What every quarterback hates is feeling suffocated, where you could step up, but you feel your center and your guards getting thrown into your lap. Now you have nowhere to go with the football, and usually your tackles are prepared for you to step up, right? So then they can push the guy on by. Well, if you can't step up enough, then that allows that guy to be able to just continue to keep wrapping back around for a sack fumble or at least get a hand in on you because you can't step up as much as you need
but
to.
But if you don't have the edge pressure, then there's no real need. You could just stand there.
Yeah, but I still think if you look at it this way, a lot of quarterbacks, when they have to move left or right in the pocket, they're working now to that side of the field. It's seldom you see a guy be able to work to the right or left and then throw back across his body opposite. So even if you get that inside pressure, you're essentially cutting the field in half as far as the part of the field you really need to cover down on in your secondary. So you're kind of, just by getting the quarterback off his spot, you're already accomplishing that task and helping your defense improve the chance of getting an incompletion or a turnover.
And you know, I always say it's passers and pass rushers. If we take that one step further in the AFC,
good quarterbacks,
it's one team. There's one. That's basically going to be one team. It's New England.
And Pat, I don't know if you agree, because you talked very highly of Alex Smith earlier, and I think he does a good job, you know, for the Chiefs as far as kind of managing things and making plays with his feet. But he's essentially, when you look at it, if Peyton Manning's not back, and if Andy Dalton's not back, he's the next best quarterback in the AFC in the playoffs.
That's right. There's one dynamic quarterback, Brady. The rest of it, because of injuries and circumstance, there's just not a lot. It's amazing that all these teams made the playoffs with backup quarterbacks, you know, for a substantial period of time. Like a month with a backup quarterback can ruin your whole season, but there they are. Over on the other side, though, you know, you got a bunch of really good quarterbacks.
Yeah, and it always comes down to that position, just like Bill Cowher told you that one time. It's always quarterbacks.
And ironically enough, because of how the Pro Bowl voting is now, where you don't have to have X amount from the AFC and NFC, that's exactly how it came about, right? It was 4-2. It was four NFC quarterbacks.
Cam, Carson Palmer, Aaron Rodgers, and Russell Wilson.
And the only two from the AFC were Roethlisberger and Tom Brady.
Which and Roethlisberger might not even get in. Although Rex Ryan's going to get him in this week, though.
Oh, hey, stop.
Let me ask you while you're on that subject for a minute. Like, I take voting for this MVP and all the AP awards pretty seriously. And I try to make it a weekly. I have a little chart. You make it to the chart, and then I kind of grade you as the weeks go by. Did anything happen in your mind yesterday, Pete, about Cam as it relates to comparing him to Carson Palmer?
It's opened it up for me a little bit. I thought it was a slam dunk a couple weeks ago, and now it's not so much. And you know, you talk about total touchdowns, 40 for Cam. Well, it's now 35 for Carson Palmer. And yeah, you know,
I'd like to hear Brady talk about these guys. I mean, you know, between Brady, Palmer, and Cam, one guy's getting nothing. The other guy, one guy will get the Offensive Player of the Year, and the other guy will get the MVP, and one guy will get nothing. But when I got up this morning and wrote down my reaction to the weekend, I had to put Palmer right back in the race.
Biggest snub to me, and I'm talking about him, and he didn't have a good game this past week, but it'd be Antonio Brown. I mean, look, you could say he's done as much as any player outside of a quarterback for their team this year as far as giving the Steelers an opportunity, and he's been just outstanding. And I just want to throw him out there because we always give the MVP to a quarterback, it seems like, and he seems like he would be every bit as deserving.
Stop it.
Really? I can't make a case for Antonio Brown?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
He's not even the MVP of his own team.
See, because you like Roethlisberger that
much.
And I think Antonio Brown makes his life so much easier. That's not to take anything away from Ben Roethlisberger. That's just Antonio Brown has been that dynamic as a wide receiver.
I'll give you could make a case for him for offensive player of the year. I'll give you that. But in terms of MVP? No.
No. Look, he did it while it was Landry Jones at quarterback. Michael Vick. I mean, he's done it all year long. It doesn't matter who the quarterback was.
Yeah, I look. I know where you're going. You're trying to be. Contrarian.
No, I'm trying to throw it out there to someone else that like when you does it open the conversation back up because Cam Newton lost this past week.
It does.
If it does, then let's throw in.
It opens it up for Carson Palmer.
That's who it opens up for. Ultimately.
Hey, one last thing before we go, Pat. Defensive Player of the Year. I spent last week watching who I think right now would be my Defensive Player of the Year, and that's Aaron Donald.
I have no problem with that. I'm toying with him, and I might be leaning towards him, as a matter of fact. Who else is on your list?
Well, J.J.'s still on the list. I mean, yeah. I know his sack numbers aren't what they were, but I watch every snap he plays on tape because that's something I put on my thing every week, and to me, he's still playing unbelievable football. He just so happens to get three and four guys on him on every play. So, yeah, he's still in the conversation. Some people mention the Honey Badger, he's not playing anymore. I tend to lean to the corner.
Patrick Peters. Yeah, I knew you were going
to
bring him
up. Lean to the corner. I think he's been the guy that's been their best defensive player. I love the Badger, but I think Patrick Peters has been the best defensive player. So those are
some of the guys. Well, if you're going to throw in Peterson, throw in Norman.
And yeah, Norman's in the conversation,
in that
too.
Matter, then you might as well throw in Luke Kuechly. The kind of season he's had.
Norman more so than Kuechly. How about you, Pat?
Well, you know, I wanted to make sure I wasn't eliminating J.J. Watt because he won it last year, you know, and Donald's so impressive. But, you know, there are things about J.J. Watt that are just, I don't want to take them for granted. It's kind of like, you know, Tom Brady. Tom Brady, you know, other guys like him win all the time. But, you know, Aaron Donald's playing terrific, and I have no problem with him. But I think it's a lot harder if you look at all the things J.J. Watt does, you know, between the sacks, the knockdowns of quarterbacks, impact tackles. And we could all say, well, he's at a position where he should make more plays than the inside guy. And I struggle with that. To me, it's a two-horse race, those two guys. And I haven't finished up yet in my mind, but...
You know what? I'll say this about having watched every one of his snaps this year, J.J. Watt, and last year, and watched Donald's last six games because I just did a thing on him last week. Donald might be the defensive player of the year. J.J. Watt's the best player. J.J. Watt. What J.J. Watt does, Donald is starting to get doubled now that Quinn's not there, and he's facing that a little bit. But he didn't get the attention that J.J. Watt gets. I mean, J.J. Watt gets doubled, chipped, tripled, the whole deal. And I give the Texans and Romeo Crennel a lot of credit. Since he's hurt his hand, they've actually stood him up more.
Yeah.
And
which
he's
makes
rushed.
A lot of sense.
And when they've done some things where they take Clowney and him and X him, and yep. It makes it tough. And they've gotten creative with him. And because he doesn't want to have interaction with the hand as much. And I think that's helped him a great deal. So to me, Donald might be the defensive player of the year, but J.J. Watt's the best defensive player.
I don't think anyone's disputing
that. I think so,
that.
And I'm probably going to vote for Watt again. I think we do the same thing with Coach of the Year. Oh, well, you know, couldn't give it to Belichick. He always went, you know, some years he's coached a great year. But, you know, Ron Rivera's in a terrific spot to win that. But I try to caution myself not to go, that guy gets it all the time, so I'm not going to vote for him.
Right. You got to be careful with that. All right, so let's wrap it up. And next week we'll be talking postseason. Can you believe it? I can't wait. I can't wait to. You know what I can't wait for? To be 22 degrees and snowy and windy and cold Sunday night in Green Bay and watch the Vikings and the Packers breathe cold air with masks on and everything else. That's what I hope happens.
We got to see that a little bit on Sunday Night Football. Yeah. You know, you had Minnesota versus the Giants.
Yeah, but this is a game that really matters.
I know. I think that matter for the Vikings.
Yeah, it'll be fun to do. All right, fellas, we'll get back at it next Monday.